Live and in color from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California, and in parallel from the Turfs Up Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning in to the Water Zone Show this evening.
All right, a pleasant afternoon. Hope everybody's having a wonderful time. And I'm Rob Starr, along with our great host, Mr. Chris Davey. And Chris is out there in Southern California. I'm out in the Phoenix area. So good afternoon, Chris. How are you doing today?
Rob, I'm doing great, buddy. Thanks very much. I hope you're okay. Listen, I'll tell you, we have gone from winter to summer in 3 days.
I know.
We had snow last weekend. I sent you a picture of me shoveling snow on my daughter's driveway up in Crestline.
Yep.
And today it's 86.
It's the same thing out here. It's pretty warm, beautiful sky. It's beautiful out, and I'm enjoying that a whole lot. But, you know, it's nice to see snow on the mountains. I'm sure you're seeing that still. And that's pretty good. And
it's your postcard stuff.
Absolutely. And just so you know, Chris, I lost your video here, so I'm flying blind just to let you know. So if I interrupt you by any chance, I don't mean to do that. I still got your audio here. I don't know what happened to the link. I'm afraid if I try something, I'll disconnect us. So I'll just stay as it is, just so you know, just so you know what we're doing here. A lot to talk about today. Ms. Chris Austin is off. She's up doing some stuff with her mom, which I think is a good thing to do. Family comes first, so we appreciate that and hope everything's going well with her there. But she'll be back next week with us. So just got that into the news here. But, you know, there's a couple things we can talk about, even though Chris isn't here. We know what she's published this morning and some other things. But, you know, there's I don't know if you're familiar, back in June, I think, of 2022, there's a new state regulation which bans the irrigation of decorative and non-functional grass with potable water.
Yeah.
And that's for commercial, industrial, institutional settings. And the regulation applies to what I call ornamental turf that is not used for recreation. It does not apply, though, to residential lawns, school fields, sports fields, or areas regularly used for, you know, civic or community events. And, you know, it's a big deal. You know, what Newsom wants is the goal to save water and irrigation of non-functional grass. And they're estimating they can serve probably 780,000 households this year. And try to reduce that. So that's going to be an interesting project. You take a look at all these large corporations or businesses that have huge turf on their beautiful properties, and so they're telling them they have to find a way to water it with non-potable water. And so how are they going to get that? Because they're not going to tear up the streets to bring new pipes in to do that. And even if they go to non-potable water, they can only water twice a week.
Yeah.
So do they do what they did back in the early 2000s when they painted the grass?
Yeah. I mean, you know, those guys came out of the woodwork when that happened, right? The grass painters, when everything turned brown. Or brown is the new green was also the thing. But I think what you're talking about is AB 1572, non-functional turf ban. I don't know. It's just it came up once, then it became inactive in the state because the state senate said they weren't interested in it anymore.
Right.
As you said, it prohibited the use of what they were describing as traditional overhead sprinklers, right, or defined as spray sprinkler nozzles with application rates greater than 1 inch per hour, which is, you know, 90% of the nozzles on the market these days. And I think it just got upended a little bit several years ago because there's just not based on solid science, right, and real world data. So you know, here we are again, kind of looking at California Water Resources Control Board's proposed regulations, and off we go running with this deal again.
Yeah, you know, Governor Newsom signed that law as it permanently prohibits the watering of the non-functional turf using potable water for public agencies, restaurants, corporate campuses, industrial parks, certain other property things. And then the violators can face up fines of $500 a day.
Yeah. I printed a copy of it. I printed the assembly bill, 1572, non-functional turf assembly bill. It was passed on September 12th, 2023. So, you know, I've read it through, and it's got some tough statements in there.
Yeah. You know, we worry about climate change, but when you start taking all the turf out, what are you going to put in there? You put in rocks and cement, and all you're going to do is heat up the atmosphere again, even higher. So go ahead.
Certainly don't help groundwater replenishment. Of course, there's no carbon sequestration. Also, there's lots of downsides to it, but hey, we continue to go on.
Yeah. You know, there's always discussions with scientists about what's the thing to do, what's not the thing to do, and you really don't know if you made the correct decision until down the road, and then you find out what the real truth is, and it maybe was a good idea, or possibly it wasn't a good idea. So I guess unfortunately time will tell. I just don't know what all these beautiful office complexes and industrial parks are going to do. I mean, that attracts business to go more into them. Just like HOAs and places like that. I mean, I don't know if do you have an HOA by you or that you live in?
No, well, there's plenty of HOAs in the town I live in, for sure. We do not live, I do not live in an HOA, so we don't have that. We're all responsible for it. You know, and those guys, you know, they're left to enforcement of this, basically, right? I mean, I don't know. Is it the contractor that's responsible? Is it the distributor responsible? Is it, you know, how far does it go? Who carries the ball and carries the weight at the end of the day on this?
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to start hiring water police again and doing that stuff. I live in an HOA, as you know. But, you know, part of the reason we chose where we moved to and built a home and is because it was beautiful. We liked, and you've been to where I live. It's lush grounds, and you know, very attractive for people. Good, I'll use the term curb appeal, and that's why people choose a place to live, and they want it to look nice. And you know, I'm not saying that you can't have all desert stuff in, because we have a lot of that here as well. But we do have some turf, and we do have non-functional turf as well. But I don't know. Like I said, time's going to tell if that's going to be successful or not, and who's going to do it, and is there going to be any more lawsuits? Because, you know, every law that comes out, there's always a lawsuit against it for whatever reason. So,
yeah, that's the name of the game, though, right? I mean, you know, this all falls under the umbrella, really, in California, right? The regulatory state that's going on in California, and they even gave a catchphrase to it, right? Making conservation a California way of life, which is basically, you know, just saying here's a regulatory framework. To establish some efficiency goals, and we want you to follow them, right? And and if you remember, Rob, do you remember that even the Irrigation Association, the IA, they sent a letter to California State Legislature raising concerns really over the landscape efficiency standards for various different kinds of landscapes, right? Their concerns were the assumptions that were in that law over the effective precipitation rate, you know, real-time data, smart irrigation, and all that stuff. As it becomes more accurate, it becomes more easily manageable. However, making a law that manufacturers can't make immediately products available on the market for these guys, that contractors and homeowners in the state that have to meet these requirements, you know, that's what the IA wrote to them about and said, hey, you know, there's a lot of costs and concerns and regulatory burdens, especially economically disadvantaged communities, right? I mean, there's got to be some equitable access to reclaimed water and upgrading your irrigation systems, right? The potential cost of all of those regulatory burdens of that proposal, especially on economically disadvantaged communities, is significant.
Yeah. Well, as I said at the beginning, even if you have a large turf industrial complex, what do you do if you don't have access to non-potable water? Because, you know, you can get those in certain cities that put them in the ground and dig up the roads all the pipes in. But when you don't, that's going to cost millions of dollars, and they're not going to do that. You know that. They won't spend the money on that. If it was a choice to put that in or to fix the depleting ancient water infrastructure of the pipe systems, they'll fix the pipe systems before they put new pipes in for non-potable water. So that's just the way it's going to go. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I you know, looking at stuff that Chris was doing, she was telling us that you know, the EPA now is requiring monitoring and treatment to limit and reduce PFAS in drinking water, which is getting to be a big problem. How do you see that coming about?
Well, you know, PFAS has been around for a while, or PFOS, or you know, there's several different kinds of pollutants. But I think, you know, basically they're trying to get down to the six major ones. I think that's what was behind that law, and restrict those, or at least limit their parts per million, parts per billion, parts per trillion, even as you get into these. But, you know, PFAS, as we know, has found its way everywhere, not just in drinking water, but just about everywhere you look, almost every sort of home, residential product that you're buying has some sort of PFAS component to it. So, you know, it's got to be a broader regulation that gets to the root cause, alongside regulations that require water companies, water agencies, water purveyors to regulate or filter or screen for the amount of PFAS in water. So it's a big issue, and I'm afraid it's going to be around for a while, and it's going to become one of those water-related news stories that we hear more and more about, Rob.
Yeah, I totally agree. Again, I worry about how's that going to be enforced. You know, there's so many places within the United States that have poor water to begin with the lead and all of that, and for years, and they haven't cleaned them all up yet. And I don't know if there's really an effort to take care of all of that first, and then jump on the PFAS thing. I mean, there's only a certain amount of people and a certain amount of time and a certain amount of dollars available for that. And anybody can, you know, any state can come up, or government can come up and write a new law, a new regulation to do things, but how is it going to happen? I don't think you can do everything. It's my thing. I always ask water agencies, you know, if I told somebody they're going to be the czar of water, what are the top three things you got to tackle first? Because you can't tackle every single one that's open. It's just impossible.
Well, you know for sure. I love that question. Whenever we have a guest on for a guest segment. It's just a fantastic question, and every time somebody answers it, no matter who it is, right, political somebody from the water agency, somebody from the EPA, somebody from a private sector contractor, the answers are so broad-ranging, but there's always one common factor right there, and it's always conservation.
Yeah, but that doesn't cure lead. It doesn't cure the PFAS. You know, we can certainly you know utilize less water, but you still have all the contaminants in the water, and then you have all these little tiny water agencies that can't afford to clean up the stuff. So they're. I mean, you and I were at a seminar a couple of years back with Municipal Water of Orange County, and they talked about these little water agencies, these private little water agencies that maybe have 50 to 100 customers, but the water is very impure. They don't have the money to fix it, and then they were trying to force that on the bigger companies, water districts, to take a hold of those and run them and fix the problems. And that's, you're still talking millions of dollars. Even if you had to take care of 50 people, if you had a dirty water system with lead and all kinds of other stuff in it, PFAS and you know, algae blooms and all that, you're talking millions of dollars to take care of 50 people.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I think they should take care of people. I think anybody that has, you know, it's a right to have clean water in this country. And as far as So far advanced we are as a country in technology, there should be nobody in this country to have terrible water. There's no excuse for that. We're not a third world country. So that's
just the sensitivity out in just you and I talking about it, colleagues of ours talking about it, right? We've been in conversations, and you tell somebody in a casual conversation or in a group that you drink tap water, and they go, "Ooh, you drink tap water?" You know, it's like, wow, it's like, you know, we're not supposed to do that.
Well, you know, I don't have it right handy in front of me, which I'll bring it up next time, about the testing of bottled water and what companies are rated and what the rating system is and who has the best tasting water in bottled water and who has the worst one and who has more PFAS in the bottles and stuff. I mean, you got the same thing there, you know? One of my grandparents lived in the Bronx, New York. And I remember growing up, my parents used to tell me the best drinking water to have, because we lived in New Jersey at the time, the best water came from the Bronx. And it was every time I went to my grandma's house and turned on the water, it was ice cold. It was delicious, as I remember. You know, maybe my taste buds evolved from them, and I may not like it anymore. But that was the story. There's some places that have pristine water. There's some that you know, a lot of agencies have put fluoride into the water, and that, I don't know if that's still an issue. You know, I know, 20 years ago, people were arguing about they don't want it. And why are they sticking it in there? You know, and they're saying, well, it's good for your teeth, and it's good for this, and that. You know, other people are making decisions, and the public really didn't have a whole lot of choices on what they're putting in the water. So I don't know. I mean, I just see so many issues. I don't see a list that anybody is really tackling. I mean, you and I can write up a list of 30 things off the top of our heads that need to happen in the water industry, but I don't see them all being attacked on and how they're going to get accomplished. Okay. Go ahead.
Quite honestly, Rob, I think I can do more than 30, buddy. But
yeah. I agree. So
let me just tag onto that real quick, right? Because PFAS or fluoride or whatever's in there, I've been drinking tap water since I've lived in this community I live in now for 40 years. Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't seem to have caused an issue for me. And the water here is delicious, but just as you stated. But let me tell you, I mean, throughout the year, especially in the early summer, you can get stuff that happens on surface water, and that will cause the local water agency to treat the water differently, and they may chlorinate it, or they may do something different. And it, you know, when it comes out, everything's good, and you turn on your tap the next morning, and is that chlorine?
Yeah.
And what is that smell in the water? Right? I mean, so throughout the year, the water treatment companies can change the way they treat and process the water.
That's just like gasoline. You have summer blends and winter blends and things of that. But let me ask you a personal question. So I know you like beer, and beer is made with water. Do you taste anything different through the years with that? I'm just asking. I'm not picking it. I mean, I'm not a big beer guy, so I don't know.
No. It's absolutely fine, and you know full well. So I'll just put a little adjunct on your statement there. I like wine. I love beer.
Yes. I know that.
So, and you know, and I've tried them all, and you know, we've had folks on the show here with toilet to tap breweries and stuff like that, and I've drank those and been supremely satisfied with the result. I have not been able to muster up the courage to walk up to the toilet to tap processor directly as those demo stations have been going around on that big truck. I haven't been able to walk right up and, faithfully take a 4-ounce glass of water that has just been treated. And I don't know if I would if I had the opportunity, Bob. How about you?
I've been on a tour. I don't think it's Torrance, or it might be Hawthorne where I was. It was years ago, and they were one of the first ones. And I watched the demonstration. They asked people to come up and take a drink. I did not. I guess I believed them, but I was still a little anxious about doing it. You know, it was, and you know, they don't try to say that technology anymore, toilet to tap. but that's what it is. I mean, and they treat it, and most of the things that, and a lot of people that are getting it today and don't even know it.
And, I know.
That's recycled. So I guess it's like what you eat. You know, when I was over in some foreign countries like China and other places where they eat some different kinds of things, and you know about it, you kind of change your mind. I mean, there's places that serve monkey brains. There's places that serve dog, like in Singapore and some other places. It's a lot of money. And even at the county fair in Orange County, California, I went with the family one time, and they had a guy who was cooking insects. And they were using mealworms and other things. And they even say they use it to put in cooking flour, baking flour. And you can find, if you read the ingredients in some of those, they have things like that. You know, they talked about grasshoppers and things like that. Now, to us, and I'm not asking if you get into that. I don't. But, you know, they say it has a lot of protein and things of that sort. I think it's a mindset. It's how you go to market with things like that. I think the thing that hurt them at the beginning, a lot of water agencies was using the term toilet to tap. That's kind of a big turnoff, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and then there was another company years ago that myself and your predecessor, Mike Barron, who great friend, you know that. And we were walking the trade show, and some company had a spray bottle, looked like a bottle of what's the word you see it in, the window cleaner, you know, something like that.
Windex.
Yeah, it was same shape bottle. And what the idea was is that when you use the toilet, instead of flushing immediately, you spray two sprays of this liquid into it, and it kind of treats it and gets rid of the smell. But you don't have to flush it till the end of the day and when you go to sleep. So if you use the toilet or your family used the toilet all day long, saying you had, you know, your two girls back home when they were younger, and you and your wife, you have four people using the toilet, and you don't flush it all day until 10 o'clock at night. I don't know if I could do that. I can't imagine. We have a party at our house, and the toilet's filled with stuff. And, you know, we've been spraying this stuff in there. I just don't think that's the thing I would like to show my neighbors or friends when they come over. I'm conserving water by not flushing 10 times a day. That's a killer with friends and neighbors and family.
Yep. Well, Rob, I know we're getting to the end of the segment here, but I just want to say one more thing from Maven's notebook, because as you saw on her post today, it's official, right? Salmon fishing season is closed in California this year again.
Yep.
Again.
Yep. So that was the top story
for me. Yeah, yep. Top story for the second year in a row. So anyway, just didn't want to end the segment without raising, you know, getting on the soapbox.
No, and for our listeners, you know, please go to mavensnotebook.com and become a subscriber. It's a great way to get all the news about water every single day. It pops up. I mean, when I'm up in the morning, I know, Chris, you're up probably a little earlier than me, but you get all the water news that you ever want, stuff that you don't read about, that you don't hear about anywhere else. She's got the connections, and again, I don't know how she stays up all night long and gets these things together for the morning edition, but it's amazing. You can also become a sponsor if any of the listeners want to. It's a great way to help support a person who's good. And as most of you know, she's also been inducted and is an inductee in the Green Industry Hall of Fame, so she's been honored a lot for her talent and what she does and brings the great news to us. So we appreciate that from her. I hope she's doing well with her mom. And she'll be back next week. But we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to be back. We have a company called Thrive that we're going to talk to, and they get some interesting things for landscape people, or even people who have homes and want to do some designing of landscape irrigation and things of that sort. So stick around. We'll be back in just a moment, and stay tuned.
NBC News on KCAA Loma Linda is sponsored by Teamsters Local 1932, protecting the future of working families. Teamsters1932.org.
Research shows you're about 10 times more likely to close a deal with an existing customer than a new one. And with water regulations on the rise, it's never been easier to upsell efficient irrigation systems to your customers. Upselling to your current customer base can provide them with the best products for their lawn while growing your business. This is the best time to seize this opportunity. We'll walk you through 5 ways to help you leverage water regulations to upsell to your customers. First, offer to audit your customer's systems. This can generate additional revenue through maintenance while offering the opportunity to discuss upgrades to their current systems. Additionally, offering audits can help strengthen your customer relationships in the long run. Next, talk to your customers about water regulations in your state. As laws around water regulations continually shift, it's important to keep them informed and their systems up to date. If their current systems don't comply with regulations, you can use the opportunity to sell them on more efficient systems. If your state isn't currently mandating water regulations, it could be in the future. You can set your customers and your business ahead of the curve by promoting efficient irrigation systems now. Next, communicate the benefits of smarter products to your customers. Recommend products that are easy to program and operate, and simple to install. Wi-Fi-based smart controllers, rain sensors, and weather stations can give your customers peace of mind, knowing their systems auto-adjust watering schedules based on weather and soil conditions. Talk to your customers about how they can have a great-looking lawn while saving water. PRS rotors and sprays can manage water pressure fluctuations and provide full coverage. Additionally, high-performance nozzles and drip and micro-irrigation can keep lawns healthy through high winds and drought. Promoting these products to your customers is another way to increase your revenue while keeping your customers' water bills down. Last, find a partner you can rely on. SiteOne is here to help your business thrive with smart, quality products, in-branch experts, and online resources. We're right here with you every step of the way. SiteOne can help you turn these regulations into opportunities to grow your business and boost your bottom line. Learn how you can take your business to the next level. Stop by SiteOne to talk with an in-branch expert or visit siteone.com/savewater. SiteOne. Growth starts here.
Get up, get down, get funky. He will. The water's... I'm having fun with Mr. Chris Davey on the video link, so we're having fun. It's a lot different than being in the studio together, but it's still fun to do. Welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone show. We have a great guest coming on, and actually, I was kidding around and made a mistake on who we're going to introduce, and it's a company called Irrisketch. And they got an interesting product, and it could be good for landscapers. People who want to design their landscape designs and put in an irrigation system, and it has all the smarts, and it's pretty reasonable. And so take a listen to it. You might as well check it out. So here we go.
Well, good afternoon again, and welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone show with Chris Davey and myself. And we have some special guests of some interesting product that tingle your thoughts of maybe you should go out and buy it. We have two gentlemen here. We have a gentleman named Theo Verst, who's the CEO of Irrisketch, and also Philippe Prosenko, who is the chief technical officer. So we got the two brains of the company, and we're going to have a great conversation. So Theo and Philippe, welcome to the Water Zone.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Well, you're calling in from Germany, so we're at way different time zones, but it's still not your bedtime yet, so we can have a great conversation going here. I happened to see Theo at a trade show, at the irrigation show, and it was very interesting seeing the product, and I thought this would be a good thing to talk about. So, Theo, why don't you start off and telling a little about what is Irrisketch and how did it come to be, and why do you see a need to have a product such as this?
Yes, Irrisketch. It's a web-based planner for or design program for irrigation systems, mostly in the residential way. So we provide to all customers, mostly contractors, some irrigation software where they can easily and fast plan their irrigation projects.
Is it a type of program that maybe a homeowner could use, or is there a price that may, because I haven't asked you what the price is, but is there a price that would exclude just general public use of it?
No, we our main target is definitely the professional irrigation contractor. So at the end, of course, if a private person wanted to use IrisCatch, they can. They can also buy IrisCatch if they want, but for a one-day project or for a one-time project, it should be too expensive, and it's too complicated to get it in one shot. So you need some practice to do good irrigations in IrisCatch. I think you need to practice to overall do good irrigations at all.
And you probably should have, I would say, some knowledge about sprinkler heads and drip irrigation.
Oh, yes.
And things that you're doing in crop coefficients. I noticed that when I went to your website, I looked at your little video you had, and designing a system is like instantaneously. It's like 15 to 30 minutes, depending on the how technical it is.
Oh, yes. And that's exactly the way how we think how irrigation design should be, because you want it easy and fast. IrisCatch, it's completely usable by touchscreen. So you can, if you want, starting the design inside customer's garden using your tablet or your smartphone. And so by our webpage, our design system, it's so easy by click and drag and drop and clicking, placing nozzles and calculating precipitations that, yes, a normal contractor can do it very easy without studying some complicated CAD system.
So, Teo, this is a software program for sure, and a design aid. Do customers need to purchase a physical piece of software and put it on their computer, or is this completely online? It's like a subscription.
Yes, exactly. It's a subscription. It's about $485 a year, a yearly subscription, and the software is completely online. So that means no installation required. And our main advantage out of this is that we don't have to update anything. So if Windows or Apple starting to update some OS system, we don't have to update IrisCatch. So you can reach it from wherever you are, whichever device you want.
Speed is obviously an issue, as you and Rob were just discussing, right? Or you know, there's a complexity to doing an irrigation design for sure. So, you know, how do you speed it up? Obviously, by making kind of like the routine tasks and things like that sort of, you know, happen behind the scenes, so to speak.
I think the mostly advantage of IrisCatch is the easy use, that you can use it only by using your keyboard and your mouse, or even with touch with your fingers. There's nothing with complicated key combinations you have to put on. And it's intuitive. It's like using your all-day software on your computer, not using like a complicated technical software like CAD.
So Philippe, there's lots of different softwares that's out in the market. I'm not an irrigation designer. I'm an engineer designing products and technology. What is the differences, or what are the key indices of your product versus what's on the market, which the competitors sell for a lot more money? What's the advantage of your product?
So that's the question for me, yes, I guess. What we are really into is the simplification of the design process, minimalistic user interface that we embedded in the web browser platform, because through years it developed from almost nothing, where you can open a page and read some text, to the platform where you can launch AutoCAD or some Photoshop. So it's a very, very optimized and a very, very nice platform to run. It is almost fully cross-platform, cross-device. You have on each device, I even ran IrisCatch on my watch. It was a smartwatch, so you can run it everywhere. And that's the main thing that we are allowing contractors to get it instantly. The only drawback is that you have to have internet, of course. We have an offline version currently, but it's not fully capable of what you need. Maybe only draw some sketch on the site where you don't have internet, and that's all. So it's probably not for the full use, but that's what we are different from others, is the simplicity and availability. I think internet came to mostly everywhere. Of course, to the places where the internet didn't reach, the irrigation of the residential irrigation didn't reach. So that's our idea. We're looking in the future, and yes, we will be launching an app that will work offline, but with the same ability of the cross-platform, because now you can create your own browser and distribute it as a software, but it will still work on the same platform as before. And that's why we will have no, the user wouldn't even understand that something happened, and he will have offline version of our program. But it's a little bit later, so we are now brewing mostly the most usable features for the actual design process.
From a question standpoint, you answered one of mine, Philippe, because I was going to ask about an app. But let's go back to the beginning of the process, right? Say I'm a user, or one of our listeners is a user and thinking about it. How do they get started with getting the basic outline in there? Do you have to enter dimensions? Can you import a CAD drawing? Can you use GeoMaps? You know, kind of give us that sort of view.
Yes, that we all have, of course. First, you need the input to your project, some data. You can use the geodata from the Google. We have the instant address input that you can enter, and then get the imagery from satellite. Then you can insert any image and PDF files, and also you can import the measurements from the you know, the device Mojer. It's now, I think, disrupting the market with its ease of the measuring everything, and we are combined together, and we are providing the ease of import of their data. So that's what we have for import, and then he will continue with the design action.
You know, what I like about what I've read about and learned about your product, there's lots of landscape contractors that are that start off as a small business. They're not like the biggest guys in the world, but they got to find a solution that's simple, that's very cost effective, which yours is. What I like about it, at the end of the design that you can do on your system, it prints out all the components. It gives you all the measurements. It's like a shopping list you can take and go to the distributor and say, okay, I need all of these things to make my system work. I need 25 heads. I need nozzles. I need the, you know, valves. I think that's pretty awesome, and what yours prints out at the end is really nice and very simple. And I see, you know, because there's obviously a lot of smaller contractors in the world, and that to me is better than going to maybe the top 10, you know, because there's more people that can use your system, and it's not costing them thousands of dollars to go out and buy and taking them 6 months to go learn and take a class to figure out how your product works. That, I think, is a key benefit of one of your products, the ease of it.
Yes, exactly, Rob. And that's exactly our idea. So in CSIM, nobody has time to design irrigation systems. Not the big ones. Nobody has time. Everybody is searching for designers doing exactly this work. And through the CSIM, everybody is looking for design. And our idea was to make everybody a designer. So, and if everybody can design the system by itself, the people start to think about how to design projects and how to install projects. So they get better and better irrigation contractors in this case, only by knowing the design process. And of course, contractors become free because they are not bounded to one of the biggest guys, which processing them with designs and of course with material and parts.
Yeah, you know, previously these contractors went to the small project residential with a paper and a pen and made a design on sketching, and that's all that he had, and just make a proposal through the bidding system or something. And now we give ability to make these projects more precise with the same effort, just drawing on the paper, like because you can get a tablet and draw on that. So that's our idea as an instrument for the contractor.
Since I personally not have used your systems, but does it offer any prompting questions? And so, for example, if I bought your software or using it and I'm designing something, would it give prompting questions to say, hey, did you think about this, or do you need to add something different in that?
There are no questions, but there are some automatic systems that prevents you to doing big mistakes, I guess. So yeah. If you are designing a system and asking for the spec sheet, so for the outlay, which comes after designing, it will show you there are some nozzles which are not connected to water source, for example, or maybe you are missing the controller, you are missing the cable between controller and valve box. So there are some automatic systems that prevents you from mistakes.
That our great and coolest feature is the automatic nozzle pick out of some series of nozzles. So you just draw in on some geometry of the property, and you don't care about the list of the available nozzles. You just drop sprinklers on it, and it will automatically pick the most appropriate regarding the availability and what you chose to be, whether it's precision series or some rotor or I don't know what you pick, and then it will automatically pick the right nozzle and pick the right device.
Now what happens on a slope if you get low head drainage coming from that end of it? Does it prompt you to do something different when you're designing it? If you put in just an ordinary thing and everything's going to come pouring out of that nozzle in the ground, I mean, is there something in your software that says, hey, you got to look for this issue?
Currently not. We don't have. We are now two-dimensional software, and we are serving it as an instrument for the specialist. So you should understand that, okay, if you just put some image, it won't get 3D or something, and you have to cope with that slopes and everything in your head and predict how the nozzle displacement should be. It also don't provide any automatical displacement for now, and you should know what you do on each side, and you can only use some guidelines that are provided by Irisketch, and like maximum water flow you can set, or you can watch instantly how much the consumption will be from all nozzles, so you can divide the zoning, make the zoning properly. So it only helps like with the figures, not in 3D. But yeah, we have some plans about this, but it will be.
I remember back when I started on this, I was sitting down at a desk with a T-square and a triangle. So that's how I started as well many, many years ago. But, you know, tell our listeners a little bit about some of the automation. You did talk a little bit about the nozzle, choosing the nozzles. But does the software offer things like, automatic head placement or recommended head placement, pipe sizing, you know, that sort of stuff?
Yes. Currently, automatic placement we don't have. And we have some, distribution of nozzles along the line. I don't know, like in other simple products where you have only the displacement between the nozzles. But what we have is a calculation of hydraulic, and we have actually the simplified version of hydraulic calculation. We go from that point that every nozzle on the residential project should receive the recommended pressure. And with that idea, we get the consumption of the nozzles. And when we get the consumption and the line displacement, the zoning and the lateral pipes, how they laid, we calculate the speed on each piece of the pipe. And according to the speed on each piece of pipe, we get the diameter, because we try from the smallest. If the speed is over, then let's say 5 feet per second, then we will go more. And by that, we can recommend the best diameter for this pipe. Of course, you cannot rely on when you have big projects, big distribution lines. So we actually target this version as a residential, and that's why we have this simplify.
I was just going to kind of tag onto that question a little bit, because we've talked about, you know, distribution equipment, right? The sprinkler and stuff itself. How about going, you know, upstream of the nozzle itself and looking? Tell us a little bit about the valves and controllers that interact with AeroSketch.
Yes, you can set up the system consisting of the water distribution, water source. Let's start from the beginning. There is a water source, then you lay the main pipe, then you set up distribution valves, and then you make the lateral pipes zoning. Of course, when you design, you go backwards. So you first put the nozzles, then connect them with the lines, then place somewhere the distribution valve, and then go through with the main pipe to the known water source position. So it is very intuitive, I think, and it provides also with some recommendation that, okay, you didn't place the controller and it won't be properly understood how much valves and how they will be controlled with the 24 volts, or this will be autonomous controller. And by choosing these small, not so hard to pick items, you will get in the final the most appropriate specification list. I mean the bill of material. Yes, that's how it works. So
now would the people using this have to have a real basic knowledge of irrigation? For example, if they were going to lay a drip line and they used a 15 millimeter or an 18 millimeter, and say it was a smaller size tubing and you had to go 300 feet, would it know when they put that in that they did it wrong or did it right? Can they
yes,
tell
us? Currently, Theo, please, can you answer this question? Because you're mostly using the drip.
I mostly use the drip line, yeah. Yes and no. You can set a water flow on your water source. And if the water flow is over what you are set at the water source, so it will show you with a yellow marking line that this one is overloaded. So for example, you choose too much drip line on one water source, it will show it to you.
But it don't decide on which actual drip line you have, because yeah, we don't calculate the hydraulics for the drip lines. We know that there is a recommendations by the manufacturers, which they have for the maximum length for the drip, but we actually didn't baked it in the design process. So you have also in some places to get the idea of how much you are putting on the same source for the drip.
Yes. So how do people get in touch with you to find out about your products?
Join our website. Okay. So we are providing some tutorial videos to get inside AeroSketch. Or if people want, they can appoint an online meeting with us. So in this case, we take about an hour to explain everything directly, personally, to our customers.
Okay, and what is your website?
It's AeroSketch.com.
Okay. Chris, any follow-up questions while we got a minute left?
Well, yeah, I did have one, I guess, that we didn't cover. I was just looking at asking a question about the program itself. Is it proprietary to you? Is it open source? What's behind the program?
It's built on the open source frameworks. Of course, we baked some our code that is proprietary, and we do not made it open source actually as long. And yeah, we just build on the frameworks.
Is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know, Theo?
Oh, yes, please join AeroSketch, try it. You have a 14 days trial period for using AeroSketch for free. And if you don't want it, don't like it, please make a comment to us to how we can improve AeroSketch.
And a special offer, if you join us until the end of March, then you will get the personal online training. We will spend a half an hour, me and Theo, a personal introduction into AeroSketch. That's what we do.
Sounds good. All right, thank you, gentlemen, for being on the Water Zone. And I hope all our listeners, especially the contractors, go out and take a look at this thing. It's a great little program, and it's inexpensive. It's way affordable, and you can be up and running in and getting a design done in 30 minutes or less. So we appreciate that. Thank you, guys. You have a great evening.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
All right. That interesting kind of a product, but hope you check that out. It'll save them a lot of time and money, and they'll get to be smart on how to do irrigation systems. So, Chris, I just want to tell our listening audience so they know. Most of you might know that the Toro Company has a partnership with the Wyland Foundation, and we have also joined with CBS Television and KCAL in Los Angeles. We are doing something called Earth Month, Streams of Hope Activity Challenge. And the Wyland Foundation's, what you do is go to WylandFoundation.com, click on My Volunteer Water Project web app, and it makes it really easy. So you just go online on that and find a simple activity you can do. It's free. You can win a lot of prizes. You get also tickets to the Beach Life Festival in Redondo Beach coming up. That's going to be a good thing. They're giving away a Wyland original sign painting, which is worth thousands, and a home irrigation gear from Toro, so that should be pretty good. And some of your activities, it's simple. You do tree planting, litter removal, hazardous waste cleanup, waterway cleanups, community gardening, and smart landscaping. Any of those things can be good for this. You just write down what you do and send it in. Nobody comes and checks. They believe you. We have honest people for that. A couple other things that are happening that we're going to be around the state. We're going to be at the Rancho Mission Viejo Earth Day Fair on April 13th at 2 o'clock. Riverside Earth Day Festival and Insect Fair, that's on April 20th. And the 2024 Earth Day Celebration in Rialto, California, April 17th at the Rialto Civic Center South parking lot. And City of Chino Earth Day event on April 18th, 4 to 7 at the Chino Creek Wetlands and Educational Park. Also on April 20th, 9 till noon, we're having the Westminster Earth Day Festival. That's at Cornett Park, where Toro did a whole redo the park on irrigation and lighting, and have experts from Toro there telling people how they can use water more wisely and conserve water. So that's all going to be happening. There's also a Wyland Whale Art Coloring Activity Contest that's going to happen with KCAL and CBS News TV, along with the Toro Company. And then there's also a whale and dolphin adventure art lesson in the wild, and that's happening for kids 3 to 12. It's at the Dana Wharf Whale Watching Facility, and that's going to run from 9 a.m. to noon Saturdays throughout April. So that should be pretty good events to take your family to go do. I'm going to be probably covering one or two of them, and we're doing a lot of things with the Wyland Foundation, which is a great organization for making sure water is clean, making sure that people use their water more efficiently and wisely, and it's a good partnership, and we enjoy doing that and sponsor a lot of those things with Chris and I. Right, Chris?
Absolutely, buddy. And you know what? I'm just astounded that you remembered all that, Rob. I hope you had some notes to help you, because I forgot about three or four of those things that I had written down, but great job of doing that. Earth Day is always important to us. We've always been at an event on Earth Day, and the same this year. No moss growing on the soles of our shoes, buddy. That's for sure, right?
Right. You're absolutely correct. But you're going barefoot these days, I hear.
Oh, absolutely. You know what? It's a new thing I'm into, and we can talk about that on another day. But I will tell you this, just tagging on our weather talk at the beginning of every show there, it is another storm coming this weekend to California. Hopefully it's the last, Rob.
Yeah, I saw that too. I didn't know if Chris was going to talk about it, but I'm glad you brought that up. But we're just about the end of our show. Chris will be back with us next week, so we miss her this week, and hope everything's going great with her mom. And hope everybody had a good time. If you want to know more information about this, you can write to us on email. And Chris, you know the email address?
It's thewaterzone.toro.com.
That's right. I always wanted you to share that with me so I don't have to be the one to always keep talking. I appreciate that. That's a good way to get a hold of us, and we can get any news, or if you have any comments or anything down the road, that'll be great. We have a bunch of great guests lined up almost 2 months ahead of time already. So we're very excited, and there'll be some really interesting things. So everybody, you have a great weekend, and the most important thing that Chris and I always tell you to do,